Good morning and welcome to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us. It is Friday, the 20th of November. It's very nice that it's Friday. And we love having you here, and we love having our panel here, and I will introduce them to you in just a moment. A reminder, you can join us and join our conversation as well. It is roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. Let me introduce the group to you this morning. They are all standing as I introduce them.
Why?
They're filing in as I...
They're all standing out of
Stage left waiting to be introduced, so they will file in and sit in their respective seats. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Hi, Joe.
Good morning. University of Albany journalism professor Rosemary Armeo is with us.
Hello.
Hi. And essayist, author, editor, activist Barbara Smith, and literary legend, Barbara Smith is with us.
Hi, how is everybody?
Wonderful. Great. How are you? How was the event?
Well, it's really wonderful.
It seemed, I saw pictures, and it seemed like everybody was very happy in that you got the wonderful kudos that you should get.
That's really nice, and it was really great to meet Gregory Maguire, too.
Yeah, he's a very nice man.
The other
a very
legend.
Cool man.
Yes.
Excellent. Well, let us begin and start off talking about what is happening in the news, unless you have anything to start. You have anything to start off with, Alan? Anything fun?
No,
anything to share with the class?
Yes, it's Friday. Thanksgiving is coming up. I recorded... an interview for Playing the Day After Thanksgiving with the dean of, you know, the wonderful, our wonderful friends down the Hudson River, you know, at the CIA, not that CIA, but the Culinary Arts Institute. And we're going to play it on the day after Thanksgiving. They tell you what to do with all of the leftovers, including making a stoup. And a stoup is, you know, a soup with all of the body parts of the turkey and as well that are left over as well as anything else that can go into the stoup.
So do we call it a stoup because it is a stew and a soup?
I think so. You may be onto something there, Joe.
No. Rosemary may be onto something. No, because it's stupid. Is that what you said?
That's what I said.
Stupid. It's brilliant, as a matter of fact. I take great issue with that, Rosemary.
Well, I'll tell you, if you want to see, to start celebrating the holidays, last night in my little town of Greenwich, New York, we had our lighted tractor parade, our holiday lighted tractor parade.
Oh, boy.
So, catch this. How many tractors do you think we had in the parade?
500.
No, 65.
Okay.
Wow.
That's a long parade. I just want to say that.
Do you have a tractor?
No, I don't have a tractor.
Don't you have a little garden tractor?
Did that make you want to get one?
No. We're not talking garden tractors. These things are beasts.
These are
huge tractors. These are farm tractors.
And they're dangerous.
And, well...
People have had major accidents.
Well, of course. But
you know, just like in cars?
Doc Watson's son. That's how he went.
Okay.
These were very safe, and they have to have a minimum of 1,000 lights, although most had something like 10,000 lights on them.
God. Each one?
Yeah. And they have the generators, and they're going down the street. And now, I don't know where you were last night, but it the rain held off till the moment the parade started.
Uh-huh.
And then it just came
down.
And
you wonder why Syrian refugees want to come here.
So then
where else?
So we sat in the rain and outside of the brewery, of course, and watched the parade. And my God, was it fun! We just had a blast. It was really neat to see the kids and very much in the holiday spirit. It was an awful lot of fun. And I'm just starting to get over the headache from the tractor fumes.
Oh yeah.
But it was a great time, and they do a great
job.
Did
anybody drive a little garden tractor in the
parade? There were a couple. There were one or two that it was a man who had a little garden tractor, and he completely covered it in lights so that it looked like a so he looked like a reindeer, and then there was a little cart behind it that they made look like a sleigh, and in the dark with just the lights,
yeah.
It really did look like that.
Well, you have put Little Greenwich on the map.
No, it was incredible, but it's an hour and a half parade, and there were just thousands. Well, there's 65 tractors. It was a lot.
Going at 3 miles an hour?
Going at 3 miles an hour. Mm-hmm. My brother was driving the fire truck. That was very exciting. And it was fun. Good time.
I don't know. You know, our listeners are always interested in this kind of thing and other things. Tom Capoletti just wrote us and wondered, did you bury the conservative outback?
No, I missed something.
Yeah,
no,
we had a wonderful addition to the panel the other day.
Who, by the way,
yes.
has been here for years, but that's another story.
Whatever happened,
somehow
he's got 1,000 letters.
Yeah.
And who was that person?
Rich Honan.
Rich Honan.
Oh,
who
yes.
you were on the
he
panel with
the
last
panel,
week.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, and
week.
People said, get rid of him. We don't want a conservative on our station. So we know better than that, right, Barbara?
Well, it's free speech in the United States.
Well,
full
it's
of
very,
diversity.
It's
full
very
of
important,
diversity.
Isn't it? Mm-hmm. On all
to
sides.
To me, it is.
Yeah.
So let us get to the topic at hand, because Rosemary has already started to text friends.
Yes. Tractors and
I've already lost
letters.
I've already lost Rosemary. So let me get on to what's happening in the world. So the House voted; they passed a bill to tighten the flow of Syrian refugees over the president's objections. The House on Thursday passed legislation aimed at tightening controls on refugees from Syria and Iraq, and what Republican leaders say is a swift and strong response to last week's terrorist attacks in Paris. The vote was 289 to 137. The bill's fate, however, is uncertain after President Obama delivered a veto threat Wednesday. Senate Democrats vowed to block the bill, and key lawmakers across Capitol Hill said they are more concerned about security vulnerabilities other than the refugee program.
Shameful. Shameful. I think this is akin to blocking Jewish refugees from the United States in the lead up to World War II. And aside from that, a total waste of time. It probably won't get through the Senate. If it does, Obama is going to veto it. Well, why not deal with some real issues that they can make a difference in rather than spinning their wheels on this for just show?
Well, we don't do that, right, Alan?
Well, no, I don't. I mean, you know, it's very disturbing. The whole thing's very disturbing to me. I think Rosemary's right. You know, there's the right thing to do, and then there's the political thing to do.
Right.
The party politics thing to do. The president, and I have to say this, God bless him, is just doing the right thing. He's being presidential. He's doing what's right. Yet, I have to tell you that there were a lot of Democrats who voted with that
resolution.
Yes,
quite a few.
And that's because, you know, when it comes to people's personal safety, they'll just say whatever it takes, and they forget about people's rafts sinking in the middle of the ocean and the
tiny children washing up on beaches.
Exactly.
Yes.
Thank you for that.
Indeed.
Exactly what I meant to say.
Indeed. Well, this is the first time I've been on the show since the events of last Friday night in Paris, and there's so many awful and disturbing things and ripples, and this is one of them. I think that what they're saying about, and this is accurate, about these visas or visitors' visas, that's much more porous and much more
That's how the marathon bombers got in. Oh. Their parents were refugees, and they brought in other relatives on visitor visas.
Mm-hmm.
So if you really want to stop things, you got to look at that.
Right, indeed.
And I will remind you that the bombers, the terrorists in Paris, came from Belgium, not from any place in the Middle East. Mm-hmm. And all of this has been based on very inconclusive and possibly spurious information that one of the terrorists had a Syrian passport in his pocket. It may be counterfeit, it may be stolen, but that's been used as the reason
rationale.
For
the
all
smoking
the rationale.
Gun up
it's
here.
just so flimsy.
Well, this brings out the worst of us. I shouldn't do this, and I know I shouldn't do it, but I'm going to do it anyway. This morning's Berkshire Eagle has a letter in it, a very well thought out letter about how terrible ISIS is, and we long ago said never again, and we're letting it happen again. You know, all of that is well reasoned and well presented. But at the end of the letter, the guy says, these people are 100 times worse than the Nazis that
they
were.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my goodness.
I was really affected. And I invite the guy to call me because I reached out. There wasn't a phone number. But I have to say, I don't know why that kind of thing is necessary at a time.
Are they saying the Islamic State is worse than the Nazi regime? Are they saying that Syrians in general are worse than Nazis?
Muslims in particular?
I believe it was these people.
These people, yeah. Okay. So, Japanese internment camps, Japanese-American internment camps during the World War II, not letting in, as Rosemary said, Jewish people escaping from the Nazi regime. It's just really problematic.
So please do not misinterpret what I'm about to say, and I'm saying this more to the audience than I am to the panel, but it is... So I'm thinking about this issue, and you have the president being very strong in what he's saying. But God forbid something happens,
well,
right?
Well, it might, Joe. You know,
it will.
There's no policy, no screening that's going to prevent everything from happening.
No matter what happens, it will.
Exactly. But you have to remember that the screening program for Syrians right now is the toughest ever. And we know how to do this. We have been screening immigrants for over 100 years.
I understand all of that. Here, I'm just talking about this, like, what then, well, you know what the uproar would
it's
be.
It's Willie Horton. That's what it is. You know, it's the idea that you take somebody and you make an example, and this guy got paroled, and therefore he committed a crime, and therefore nobody should ever be paroled again.
And then a terrorist attack is on this president's watch.
Well, Hillary seems to know it. I mean, you know, there she is, and the papers are all playing it, and it's obviously getting leaked from the Clinton people that she's tougher on terrorism than the president.
She's in favor of refugees, though, too. She's come out very strongly in favor of that.
Yeah.
One does not preclude the other. The refugees are not terrorists. Will the terrorists try to use their flow into this country again? And of course they will. Yeah. But that can be stopped. I'm impressed by the stories coming out in local publications around the country where they're talking to actual
Syrian refugees
who have been here. And it is almost uniformly this story of bravery and trying to make a new life. They're not terrorists.
And the fact that since 2011, 2012, the sheer number of Syrian refugees and refugees in general who have come to this country we didn't have any problems then, obviously.
No.
And so I don't know how you then turn around and make sense of that.
Well, that's what xenophobia and racism are.
Exactly.
I mean, it's not rational. And the thing is, Donald Trump is saying that all Muslims need to be registered. That is, all Muslims need to be registered.
Isn't that crazy?
And Ben Carson is comparing. I guess Muslims are, I don't know who he's using.
Muslims loose in your neighborhood.
Yeah, as mad dogs, as rabid dogs. So
and
that's
Jeb Bush is saying only Christian Syrians.
Yeah, so that's the level we're at.
And Kasich wants a new federal agency to promote Judaic Christian values.
Which is so interesting because I know I'm going to get hell for this.
We already have that.
Well, he's saying now instead he'll just beef up the Voice of America.
No, we already have that. Oh, you mean like in other places?
In other places.
Okay, yeah, mm-hmm. So we have that too. Yeah.
So Donald Trump says that he's open to requiring American Muslims to have special IDs, which of course are being likened to
gold stars.
The gold stars. The fact that it is being said, the fact that it is being considered, embraced, and the fact that the guy is leading in many polls, to me, is a little scary.
Absolutely.
Slash a lot scary.
Yep. No, I agree.
Do we have any letters? We have about a minute and a half.
We have about 150 letters.
Okay, great.
Tom says, when will Trump and Republic baggers promote Kristallnacht against Musk. That's a little strong, but it's what he says. And Darrell says, we're worried about Syrian refugees being infiltrated by ISIS, but we are not talking about the H-1Bs. A large number of H-1B entrants are Muslim. That has to be the biggest backdoor to the country for a potential extremist. Anybody?
Yeah, these are visas that allow for people with special skills to come in.
Okay. Schumer, under pressure from liberal Democrats, changed his mind, decided not to support Republicans against President Obama and Syrian refugees. And then he goes on about Schumer, and that's enough of that. Bob says, by way of reminder, without farm tractors, none of us would eat. And he from Bob from John Deere and Ford. that's what he said. I'm reading these on the fly. You all know that. Alan, not to pick nits, but we are the Culinary Institute of America, and that's from John. We love John, and we love the Culinary Institute of America, and I apologize for anything I may have said at the moment, the CIA. Right.
Right.
Okay. And Peter says, as a society, we have seem to have the endless tolerance for being gunned down en masse by crazy people with ready access to guns. Why is it we quake in fear at the thought of being killed by terrorists? That's from Peter. And then Joe says, tractors. This is a good point. Tractors are very dangerous. We should create a national database of all the tractors and keep a close watch over all of them.
Satire.
What'd you say?
That was satire.
I think you said ha-ha at the end of that.
I got it.
No, I know you know. Yeah. I just want to make sure the audience
everyone
got
else
it.
Does.
The audience got it.
And I guess that's it for now.
Okay. Well, if that's it for now, let's take a break, and we will come back after news from the BBC and continue our conversation. We have many other topics to discuss, all kinds of good stuff. We'll get to that in just a moment. Alan Chartok, Barbara Smith, Rosemary Armeo, I'm Joe Donahue. We welcome your comments, roundtable at WAMC.org. I think most people who listen regularly know that this is kind of how we do it. Well, basically, we look over the news the night before, and we throw out some suggested stories, and the panel weighs in, and that's what we come with in the morning. And then there's stories that happen overnight and are breaking that we want to talk about as well. So today, the story comes out of Mali. Mali Hotel is attacked by hostage takers, at least three killed. The Radisson Blue Hotel on Friday morning in Bamako. Thank you. The capital of the West African nation of Mali, seizing scores of hostages and killing at least three people. An unknown number of gunmen, perhaps four or five, had taken about 100 hostages at the beginning of the siege, and adding that the soldiers had sealed the perimeter and were now inside looking for the terrorists. So,
yeah. Don't know yet who's responsible for it. No group has yet claimed credit. I hate saying that, claim credit for it. Al-Qaeda has been a problem in Mali. It's been unstable for at least since 2012. You remember in 2013, French troops went in there to its former colony and tried to oust extremists who had overthrown the elected government. So it's not a surprise that this has happened, but the timing is very inauspicious. There's action going on all overnight. You have to wonder, is this really the last one we're going to hear? Last week there was one, now this one. They're coming faster and more furiously. Yeah,
it's not going to stop. Obviously.
And we don't have, I find that really interesting, no commentator in news or in government has yet come out with a blueprint of how these groups are all connected. Mm-hmm. Maybe they're not formally connected now, but they're coming closer together, and that's also frightening.
I saw something interesting on television last night, though, which was to say that Boko Haram is the most dangerous.
They've actually killed more people than ISIS at this point.
I mean, they're both in the 6,000s for 2014.
Almost 7,000, right.
I thought that was really interesting because we don't hear as much necessarily.
We don't. And my students actually had a very interesting conversation about this yesterday. There was, it's all about our perceptions and what we care about. Beirut was blown up.
Yes.
And it was definitely covered. All the major media and a lot of the minor media had big stories about it, but it didn't get the clicks. It didn't get the outpouring of grief and the Facebook pictures. colors and the French flag that Paris did, because we have more connections with Paris than we do with Beirut. We expect bombs to go off. So here you have Boko Haram, which is operating in Nigeria, where, you know, many Americans don't even know where it is or why it's important or why we should care about it. We have no history of relations with that.
Except for those of us who came here because of slavery.
Well, yes, except for those and people who work in the gas and oil industry.
And there's a strong connection between that part of Africa and people who were enslaved to come here.
Of course.
Yeah. But that's not a part of the bigger American story generally.
Two things that I want to mention. First of all, we were talking about Donald Trump before, and I read the news item that he was open to the idea. In the last hour in a breakfast meeting in Iowa, he said that he would absolutely require, so he has, as you said during the break, Barbara, doubled down on this as far as his thoughts. The other thing I want to
spell it out. He would require Muslims to register.
To register and to have a special ID with them at all time.
Yeah, they have to wear a crescent on their sewn onto their sleeve. Oh, I've heard of that idea before. Well, if that happens, I'm registering.
I would too. Mm-hmm. Good idea.
The other
just sui Muslim.
Certainly media project fodder, but since it happened yesterday, I just want to talk about the CNN reporter who has been suspended for 2 weeks for her tweet. We started mm-hmm. off with the House vote. Elise Labatt, who is a CNN reporter, tweeted yesterday at 2:32 after the vote, saying the House passes bill that could limit Syrian refugees. Statue of Liberty bows head in anguish.
Well, so that's an editorial position. That's an opinion position. They want her because she is trendy and she is on the cusp, and she gets a lot of viewers for this. But, you know, when you do that, you are very close to the line at all times. Somebody's going to say it was inappropriate.
So I'm curious as to why she gets suspended and Don Lemon can be an idiot.
An idiot, I know. And that's the whole problem, is that publications right now, they want opinion. They want interaction with readers. I mean, I got into trouble for this when I talked back to a reader. I got into trouble for this. You're not being objective. We don't want objectivity. We want a discussion. And that means you got to hear what I think. CNN has a very fine line. Read their policy and see if you can figure out if she broke it or not. Because you're right. Don Lemon says his opinion all the time, stupid as it may be. And she tweets something and she's going to lose pay for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah.
It's not fair. It's also, you know, it's just, I don't know. On the other hand, if I were covering the issue, if I were covering the House, would I want to telegraph that I'm in favor of the refugees and against the vote of the House? I don't know. I don't know how effective that is as a reporter tactic.
If she had just put in some say.
Yeah, exactly.
Some say, yeah. Mm-hmm. Which is a technique used by many people, you know. Let me ask you a question.
Let me play devil's advocate here, and then you give your opinion. Or in my case, I said, I'm not going to vote for this woman. If I had said, many may not vote for this woman, I would not have been in trouble at all.
Good point.
It's silly. It's semantics. Mm.
The other thing, too, and this is a larger issue, and we don't have to go into it, but I just – which is – It isn't the CNN Twitter feed. It's her Twitter feed.
Well, that's a problem because you represent WAMC even when you're at that tractor parade last night.
Sure. So, we had a case about this many years ago in which who are the guys who wear the red hats from New York City?
Santa?
No. Now that you ask.
The neighborhood protection.
Curtis Sliwa, the guardian.
I believe it was them, but they came to town and one of our guys really liked them. And he hosted them, he marched with them, I believe. I can't remember the whole story, but you know, that's a WAMC person, so you know, it's got to be.
I think it was Guardian Angels.
Yeah, Guardian Angels, yeah.
Red hats.
You're right. They wear red hats. So let's move on to do you have some letters and then we'll go to other topics?
Oh, letters, yeah. Russell says, how about a national registry for jackasses? We could see them.
It'd be a long list.
Yes, it would be.
We could see them coming.
And probably everybody would be on it, actually, because everybody's a jackass to someone.
That's true. That's very true.
Hal writes a letter of several paragraphs. I'll read the first. As shocking as the suggestions that we keep out Syrian refugees or essentially brand them are, I'm also shocked that the process of clearing those allowed to immigrate takes 1 to 2 years. Where are those people living during the process? That occurred to me, too.
In refugee camps and other places that are...
Horrible place, and they're not allowed to work when your status is uncertain like that. So, they do need support. Some of those claims that these people are coming looking for support, that's why they're not allowed to hold jobs.
Mm. Cody from Greenfield says, how is Trump still getting away with promulgating such backward and disturbing statements while still garnering support and begin the top candidate for the Republicans? I guess it's became it's supposed to be. Is the Republican base ignorant of the historical examples already cited by the panel of the ill treatment of refugees and immigrants, or even worse, perhaps they're aware, but such acts were justified and needed? Well, I think your answer to your question is there are an awful lot of Americans who agree with Trump. I mean, I hate to say it, but that's the deal. He says it. He backs off a little, and then he doubles down, and everybody says, good, that's our Trump. That's very disturbing.
And when you look at the percentages of the mainstream candidates, they're in single digits.
Have any of you talked to people who know people who are like rapidly behind Donald Trump?
Yes.
That would not have happened to me.
No, I have. And I've walked.
Well, I know. Yeah, I realize who I'm asking here. I'm just curious.
I got to tell you, I walked into a place the other day. It was a car dealership, as a matter of fact. And somebody starts saying, you're for Trump, right? I'm for Trump. There are a lot of people who are for Trump. These polls don't lie.
Yeah. I have relatives who are big supporters, and they're women, too, which is even, among the many groups he attacks are women, and he treats them horribly. And they like, well, he doesn't really mean anything by it. You know, he can say anything he wants and get away with it because he's not afraid of anybody and he's got his own money. So he's not beholden to anyone. This is what we need. The real politicians haven't done a great job. Because I do poll them. Why?
I asked the question because Rolling Stone had an article about how at these rallies where there are 10,000, 15,000 people that anecdotally, but many of the people who are polled, hundreds and hundreds of people are polled and asked the question, will you vote for him? And they say no.
Well, I would go. If there were one convenient, I would go because I would want to see the spectacle. I would want to hear it. But no, not in a million years would I vote for him. So, yeah, I can see that.
Well, you know, Brian agrees with you, by the way, Rosemary. He says, if Trump were to be elected and required Muslims to register, I, too, would register as a Muslim.
Mm-hmm.
Trump is only popular because he has rediscovered the age-old techniques of creating scapegoats and pandering to the intolerant.
Yeah,
that's so true. And then there are some wonderful, wonderful letters this morning. I wish we could get them all. EJ probably wrote the best one. He said, just checking in to let Alan know he rocks. Yay for
clearly
Alan.
Clearly the best letter.
That'll get 50 on the other side.
Let's take a break. We'll be back and continue and finish up with other topics for today. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Claire Pearson, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. For over 10 years, offering plant spirit medicine and energy clearing for health, body, mind, and spirit. C-L-A-R-E Pearson at Verizon.net. The Tang Teaching Museum and Art Gallery at Skidmore College, providing exhibits, public events, and educational programs for audiences in the Capital District and beyond, skidmore.edu/tang. And Mazzone Hospitality, providing fine and casual dining throughout the Capital District, caterings for weddings, corporate parties, and fundraising galas, MazzoneHospitality.com.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have about 15 minutes, and I want to get to a couple of topics. As I mentioned, we send out these topics, and I was reading this article last night that I just found – I knew nothing about this, and I just found it fascinating, so I forwarded it to everybody. And this is – article is in the Washington Post about a tiny pill that is fueling Syria's war and turning fighters into superhuman soldiers. It is a pill called Captagon, And it is, the war in Syria has become a tangled web of conflict dominated by al-Qaeda veterans, hardened Iraqi insurgents, and Arab jihadist ideologues and Western volunteers, according to the Washington Post's Liz Sly. On the surface, those competing actors are fueled by an overlapping mixture of ideologies and political agendas. Just below it, experts suspect there's something that experts suspect they're powered by something else, and that is Captagon. It's a tiny, highly addictive pill produced in Syria, widely available across the Middle East. It's illegal, and its sale funnels hundreds of millions of dollars back into the war-torn country's black market economy each year, likely giving militias access to new arms, fighters, and the ability to keep the conflict boiling, according to The Guardian. So there is the economic impact of this. There is also the physical effect of this,
right,
which is a powerful amphetamine tablet based on the original synthetic drug known as phenethylamine, I believe. Captagon.
Good try.
Thank you. Captagon quickly produces a euphoric intensity in users, allowing serious fighters to stay up for days, killing with a numb, reckless abandon.
Yeah, it's kind of terrifying.
So, what exactly does this thing do?
It numbs
pumps you up.
It pumps you up, and then it numbs you and helps you commit these heinous acts.
And also makes you not need to sleep, because that really means it's inducing a kind of psychosis, right?
Right.
When you don't get enough sleep.
Well,
you
what
go
about
into
all that stuff you can get in the truck stop when you get there, you know, those little bottles?
Oh, no, that's
stuff.
Not what this is. This is
speed.
The prescription level. It would be prescription level,
yeah,
if it was legal, right?
Right.
And I don't even know what it's used for. They did mention in the article what they use it for.
It's a
legitimately.
It's a controlled substance.
Legitimately, there's a use for it.
Right.
But the thing is that used for this purpose, it's just completely dangerous.
It's been around since the 1960s. It was given to people suffering from hyperactivity, narcolepsy, and depression, according to Reuters.
Right.
And then by 1980s, the drug's addictive power led most countries to ban its use. And so the question is being, or the concern, of course, is that it's being so heavily trafficked in Syria, and the use of it in many of these cells and with the those who are taking part in Syria's war,
you can just see
are
the jihadists
basically hide as a kite.
Yeah, the jihadists have pumped up people on ideology and being part of a big movement, and now they're giving them drugs that make this easier to see and to buy into. It's just a terrifying and yet real situation.
Very real and weird too. I mean,
yeah,
it's a
weird
creepy
story.
Yeah, it is. It's a creepy
Captagon
story. All right, let's go to Minneapolis, and police and protesters clash in Minneapolis over fatal shooting of black man, the fatal shooting of an unarmed black man by a Minneapolis police officer led to a tense standoff by the police and protesters this week. The police used chemical irritants after they said protesters had thrown bricks and bottles as clashes over the shooting of Jamar Clark intensified. Mr. Clark, 24 years old, was shot in the head early Sunday. He died at a hospital the next day. Protests started within hours, as some neighborhoods said that Mr. Clark had been handcuffed when he was shot, which contradicted statements by Minneapolis police. Demonstrators pitched tents outside of a police station near the shooting scene. And on Monday night, dozens were arrested after marching onto an interstate and blocking traffic. And I guess the two cases here, obviously, that yet another story
police brutality case.
A police brutality case, but also that in the other issue here, of course, being that he was apparently handcuffed.
Right. There's also why the police were on the scene to begin with. I hope that people don't think that I'm being an apologist, but it says, and as in some other cases, Minneapolis protesters have sought video evidence to resolve discrepancies between the accounts of the police and of witnesses. The police said Mr. Clark was a suspect in an assault and that he had interfered with paramedics attempting to treat his victim. When officers arrived, the police said he fought with them, leading to the gunfire. Some who said they witnessed the incident disputed that account, saying on social media or to local reporters that Mr. Clark was handcuffed when he was shot. So it's just, it really is very, very difficult to face these continuing incidents, and then also sometimes to understand what actually occurred.
Did you read the story in the Washington Post, Barbara, about the woman who locked herself out of her apartment? She's a young black woman with a real high-powered job, you know, a burger, a regular citizen. Mm-hmm. She locks herself out of her apartment, so she goes to her event. She comes back. She has a locksmith, and they get in, and she mm-hmm. gets into her apartment, and she hears a dog outside, and she looks out to find 19 police officers with a dog, and they bring her out. Her neighbor, who didn't recognize her, a white man, reported a Hispanic woman breaking into her apartment. And so she became a suspect. But the response of the police was this enormous, overwhelming force. And they at gunpoint, she's dragged out of her house. She's not told what's going on. And she writes this amazing story about the experience. And NPR has had her on, too, talking about it. So it's this true thing.
That
police.
Rosemary.
Yeah, it's I would love to hear your reaction to it, because it seems to me that we have these two things going on. There's this bunker mentality by police and these so-called protocols and procedures on how to handle things. Like, okay, a break-in is a serious thing. There should be a protocol. Is that what was going on? And it's part of the protocol that you can't tell the people what's going on, even when they're she was a meek, she's just a little woman. Why couldn't, and she's saying, officers, what's going on? She's complying with their orders. Mm-hmm. Part of the protocol is you really can't tell them. We've got a report of a break-in. Is anybody else in there with you? I don't understand why there can't be some amount of common sense in these dealings. Why were the police even at the protest while we're talking about it in Minneapolis?
You said why were they at
the protest? Why were they in force and breaking up the protest?
They were encamped at the police station, right? That's where the protest took place. Yeah. It took place right on there.
I just wanted to say that, and I know you all know this, that the police have a terribly difficult job. And, there are always those among them who make bad, bad errors, mistakes, and do things that are really, really nutty. I remember one day I get here at 4 o'clock in the morning. I look out from WAMC. There's a guy crawling on the top of, crawling outside the windows of a building across the street and trying to push the window open. What do I do, right? What should you do in a case like that? 4 o'clock in the morning, guy's out on the parapet, and he's trying to force a window open. So you call the cops, don't you?
I think that is a sensible.
And the cops come, and I never saw so many police cars, in my life. There is a certain amount of protection that goes on. You don't want to make mistakes. Turned out the guy forgot his key.
Just like this woman.
Yeah. But there are, it is a terribly difficult job to do if you're a police officer. And, I think it's tough.
But I go to what Rosemary said about common sense. Of at some point you have a moment of there is what it appears it could be, and then there is what it is. Yeah. And in just that moment to allow all the possibilities to enter your mind.
Sure.
And the thing that I was going to say is that this discussion, of course, is so ongoing. One of the things that I hear experts say is that it's all about the training. So the more training that officers have, and that's not just at the beginning of their careers, it's like constant, the more it becomes a embedded response of like, this is how I handle it, this is what it could be, this is how I analyze it, this is how I interpret and act, the more embedded that is in one's just core, because of training, the better the outcomes may be.
It's also, Barbara, a generalization, and we have to be careful about it, but we have to be very careful about who we accept as police officers. In other words, who's attracted to a police career? There are many, many good officers who are very decent people, but there are some, and I've known them in my life, who are known for, just violent reactions to anything.
Well, that's what happened in Cleveland. And a friend of mine wrote me an email yesterday saying that she and her 8-year-old daughter are going to go to Cleveland this weekend for the 1-year anniversary demonstration around Tamir Rice. Yeah. And of course, I find that one particularly painful because he was so young and because I'm from Cleveland.
There was a piece on the BBC this morning coming in very early about an Indian gentleman, a grandfather, who was took a daily, he came to help raise his grandchild. He spoke no English. Somebody called in and they played the 911 tape, and the cops showed up en masse, and they were talking to the guy. But He didn't have the slightest idea. The slightest idea of what they were saying. So the guy yells at him, "Get down on the ground." Oh. So they push him down on the ground. A police officer pushes this old man down on the ground and paralyzes him for life.
Oh my God! It's just like Dante. You know, that was another case where the police followed procedure. They didn't think they were doing anything wrong. It made sense in the context of their protocol. And a man who's been through hell before this, who didn't deserve any of it, ends up dead. It's just police need to, I think, re-examine their protocol and their training. And they also have to punish the bad guys. They get protected in forces way
too long. Absolutely right.
How many times have we done stories here where the officer in question has been in trouble and under suspicion?
Well, in
before?
This case that I just told you about, they fired the guy. They fired the officer.
The officers in Cleveland, like they were ones, at least one of them was fired from another department, was not allowed to continue his pursuit of that position
but in, this
in a
case,
suburb, and then he goes to Cleveland and he's able to get in.
Yes, but on job, this right. case, but in this case, they fired the guy mm-hmm. who did the damage. So,
and at the risk of doing a Rosemary Armeo here of opening
the
up,
minute.
Yeah, at the last minute, there also the story coming out of Harvard of the tape found over the portraits of the black Harvard professors.
Excuse me,
I don't know this.
What's this?
Did you not? You haven't heard the story?
No, this one either.
Okay. Well, and now we're out of time. But we'll do it next week. Well, you won't be here.
Well,
but,
all right. What's the tape?
So black slashes of tape appeared across portraits of some African American professors at Harvard Law on Thursday morning, outraging students and faculty members, and touching off a day of discussion about racial injustice at the school. In a statement, the school's dean said the portraits, which appeared on walls inside the building, had been defaced and that the Harvard University Police Department was investigating the incident as a hate crime.
Did you say Harvard Law?
Yes, yeah. Harvard Law specifically.
Okay.
A place who just happened to also teach our President of the United States.
That's
right?
Correct.
Yes. Okay. We will take a break there, and we will talk more. Rosemary, you're gone for a long time.
I'm gone for, a little while.
Okay.
But I'll be back. I'll be listening
All right.
In.
So we don't have to, like, wish you happy holidays or anything. You'll be back before then.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good.
Where do you go all the time? So
I'll be here.
Barbara will be here. Alan will be here.
Yeah,
we'll have our crew. Thank you very
you bring
much.
Bring on that conservative guy again. He can have my time.
Don't start the letters again, please.
But we will bring them on.
Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank
Enjoy
you, Joe.
It.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC.